Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
We posted that first GoFundMe because the dog in it, we'd featured previously, their family had always dressed up. There were four dogs that always dressed them up for the holidays. So we featured them several times. And one of them was a senior pug who needed a wheelchair, just an old age arthritis related wheelchair. And the family made a GoFundMe. It was about $700. And we featured that GoFundMe because we thought, and this is still when it was just me, I just say we because it's We Ray Talks, but I thought that my audience would be especially empathetic to the situation because they were familiar with the dog already.
Yeah.
And we raised that $700 for that wheelchair in like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the IAM studios in the heart of Los Angeles. But you know, if you're in Los Angeles, like 5.3 million other folks in the county, then your heart is with your dog or dogs in many cases. Yes, Los Angeles is the city with the most dogs in the United States. And we have the person here who is responsible for bringing maybe as many smiles and good-natured, heartwarming anecdotes as the dogs themselves. This is Matt Nelson from We Rate Dogs, Thoughts of Dog, the 1510 Foundation nonprofit, which we will get into, and the podcast, The Dogs Were Good Again. So listen, thank you for being here. Thank you for bringing Javier.
Of course.
That is your boy. And this is our girl, Zoe. Say hi, Zoe. She's a cutie. And give Javier a little love, too. But, you know, this is the truth. Whether or not you know Matt, you've seen Matt if you're a dog lover. Because we have a thread in my family. It's called the We Love, it's called the We Love Dogs thread. It's We Love Dogs. And it's my wife, her sister, my brother-in-law, and all we do is send back and forth memes. We send the tweets or the exit. We rate dogs that now Instagram thoughts of dog that are so cute, so charming, and celebrate these creatures that bring so much happiness to our lives in LA and beyond. So we're here and I want to get into the mind of the man who created this phenomenon that we need now more than ever in a world of polarization, negativity, narratives. He brings smiles and joy to people through social media and through his podcast and through his foundation. So Matt, first, again, I already welcomed you to here, but truly thank you just for what you do for this world in making it a better and happier place.
Oh, thank you so much. That's quite an intro. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I want to talk We Rate Dogs. I know you've told the story dozens, if not hundreds of times. Started, and correct me if I'm wrong, started in 2016.
2015.
As somewhat of an inside joke, as you were already doing a little bit of comedy online, you know, and you saw that your dog related content would work better because people like us like to send anything dog related. And in an Applebee's, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. First tweet was made in an Applebee's.
So tell us in your own words, the origin of We Rate Dogs and just the phenomenon that you've created. 25 million followers above across all platforms, by the way. 25 million. I don't usually like pump that up, but that number is outstanding, fantastic, and deserved. So
thank you.
Just tell us how that started.
Yeah. So I grew up with dogs. There was always a golden retriever or two in my family. And, I don't know. I was probably 12 or 13 when I like really started appreciating their presence and noticed how well they listen, to be honest. What do you want? Where are you going?
A little doggy.
You want to go this way or you want to go on the floor? Okay. Stay here for right now. And then I really became super interested in comedy in general.
Okay.
Like I was really obsessed with trying to make people laugh.
And by the way, you grew up in West Virginia?
West Virginia.
Did I read that correctly? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And then college in North Carolina?
Yes, for a couple years.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
So yeah, very interested in comedy. Loved to watch like John Mulaney, all the early Netflix specials.
Yeah.
And what I realized is that all of these comedians were testing material on Twitter at the time.
Yes, and it was Twitter, a fun place.
It was a fun place.
It was a really fun place for comedy heads. Absolutely.
Yeah. And with the character limit at the time being 140,
yeah,
you really had to put a ton of effort into being blunt. And it really instilled the importance of words and individual characters, yeah, because you only had so many of them. So I became really addicted to Twitter as a creative medium.
Yep.
I joined probably later than my peers, but I knew immediately that I wasn't going to use it to like talk about class or what I had for breakfast in the morning. It was going to be like,
I used to say the ham sandwich. That was a delicious ham sandwich. I'd be like, did you really need to tweet that?
Yeah,
exactly. Go on.
So I knew I didn't want to do that. Here, I'll put it down. I knew I didn't want to do that. And I just wanted to make, my friend at the time laugh. And I remember when I first got a follower whose name I didn't recognize. And I was like, oh, I don't know you in real life.
Cool.
And it was a really cool feeling to be able to reach people that I didn't know in real life. And Twitter at the time, the retweet button was the most powerful button in the world, I think. You could reach anybody with that button. And so I started writing jokes. They were not very good.
Huh.
But occasionally one would do well. And I recognized a pattern when I would talk about my own dog, or write a joke where the main character was a dog. They would do very, very well.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, the internet loves dogs just as much as I do.
Yeah.
There's something here. It was almost like, oh, here's a really efficient way to utilize something that I love to make people laugh. And so I was a freshman at Campbell University in North Carolina.
Okay.
I was there studying professional golf management.
I wanted to get into that.
Yeah,
yeah, so keep going. I hear you're a scratch golfer. Is that
I am,
correct?
Yeah. So
that's not a great job, by the way.
Thank you.
If I break 90, I'm like dancing a jig. That's awesome. Good job.
Thank you. So yeah, throughout my childhood, I was a swimmer and I played golf.
Okay.
Both very individual sports that kind of like crafted a little bit of how I work now. But yeah, both individual sports and swimming was my life, but there's not really a career in swimming unless you're an Olympian.
Right.
And
I'm elite of the elite.
I'm 5'8", so
yeah.
Not right. The elite of the elite. Okay. So I still played golf through high school, and golf is a massive industry. And I was like, you know what, I'll see where that can take me. And I found a major called professional golf management, offered at the time by about 20 different schools. It may be more now. But yeah, I utilized, I only applied to that one school.
Yeah.
And then I went and
How far is Campbell
like
from where
you're? 5-hour drive.
Okay.
Yeah, like a 5-hour drive.
So you're going away for college, but still.
I could drive. I drove home
okay.
for any long weekend. I would probably be home. And yeah, I recognized pretty quickly that my course load wasn't what I thought it was going to be in terms of rigor. And I had some time. And I was already, again, obsessed with Twitter as a creative medium.
Yeah.
So I just spent all my time on it and trying to like really hone in on a voice with Twitter and like really flex whatever creative comedic chops I had. But yeah, I recognized that everyone loves dogs. And so I started a new account in November of 2015.
Yeah.
And I knew that it needed some sort of consistency. It like needed a reason for people to come back to it.
A hook, let's call it.
Yeah.
Right?
And it was the ratings. It was the ratings. And I'm very ashamed by this. But originally the ratings were not all above 10 out of 10. Yeah.
I saw some earlys, eights and lower.
Yeah. Part. As soon as I went 10 out of 10 the first time.
Yeah.
Everyone lost their mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, this is how it needs to be.
Right.
And then I went 11 out of 10, and that was the end of it.
Okay,
it was so...
but explain this for anybody who might not be familiar. And if you're watching this, I'm pretty sure you are. But just in case,
yeah,
because it's not like you're like, oh, here's Zoe. She's pretty, like 9 out of 10. Like, it's not just like you're rating dogs. There's always like a funny, I don't even want to call it an anecdote, You create a situation, you know, if they're blending into the rug or one that look like a, you know, dogs sometimes sleep in a circle, like look like a donut, like stuff like that. But you phrase it in such a way, again, it's concise, it's humorous, it's not necessarily a joke. And it's always like, you know, 11 out of 10, 10 out of 10, stuff like that. How did that come about? Because again, it's not like to be like, this dog's prettier than this dog, or like, right? Like, it rewards just the love of dogs. And anybody who has this affinity for dogs, they're all 10 out of 10 or better, right? And as well, they should, because there's something to love about every dog. And these dogs have these personalities that always comes through. So you try to convey that. What's the inspiration? How did that come about?
So that's really, the origin of that is really like trying to be comedic and having and needing to fit it all in that small character space. Cause I had to be very blunt. It was very blunt, choppy sentence structure.
Right.
Like would pet is like the best example of like the most succinct, most succinct way to say that's a good dog is would pet.
Right, right.
So a lot of that is birthed through necessity. And then over time, early on, people would just DM us photos of their dogs. They would not give us any context.
I was amongst those. I can't believe you never featured Bams, our first.
I knew that's what this was about.
Yeah, and I'm calling you an attack. No, just kidding. Go on.
No, it was early on. It was like people sent us photos of their dogs with the expectation that we were about to build a world around them in that one tweet. We were going to build a narrative. We were going to make up their name. We were going to make up their breed.
Right.
Most often. We were going to call them like a rigatoni espresso and say that that's a breed. And that was how it was. There was just a slow change in 2016, end of 2016, 2017, where the content we started to get sent was not people's own dogs, but like hero dogs or dogs that had made a big impact on them, or just stories that they'd seen that they were entertained by, but not their own dogs. So we would get permission for those and feature those dogs. And there was more to tell. It wasn't like I had to make a story with a photo.
Yeah.
There was a story and I had to tell it. So that transition led to what the account is more like today, where we can make you cry. We can make you laugh still, but it can be very emotional, and we can really get in touch with why people love their dogs with every post. It's not solely comedic anymore. And I think that's largely in part because now people are telling us when they submit their dog, it's not just the photos. It's photos, but then it's a novel about why I should love their dog just as much as they do.
Oh, man.
And so we have
deserve that kind of love.
Yeah.
That's all right, but go on. Yeah.
So we have so much more to go off of when we're writing about that dog, because we're almost joining our perspective with the humans who loves their dog so much. So that's been the evolution of the account. And because of that, we can do so much more with it.
Okay. And I want to go back into evolution, but real quick, let's talk about that. The emotional connection with dogs, and even with other people's dogs, which is crazy. Like I see Javier in here today and you know, I never met him. I know he's the CEO of your company, but, very, very mild mannered and humble CEO, by the way. But, you just see that dog face. And you see him just walking, and sometimes they're waddling and sometimes they're hopping and skipping. You're like, so easy to love. And you feel there's this emotional bond. And again, especially with your dogs, I mean, meaning your anybody's personal dog, where you're just like, I don't know, explore that a little bit. Why is it that people have such a connection with dogs? They come home and they're so excited to see and just be with you, and that's all they want. And they go on.
Well, there is the ancestral piece, obviously, that I'm not like super well versed on, but it's our greatest relationship throughout the history of our existence.
Yeah.
So we're now like seeing the fruits of that labor that we put into this relationship in the unconditional love.
Yeah.
But I think there's something about, like, in terms of why we can see any dog and feel attached to it, is because I think they all represent, whether it's our dog or any dog, they all represent, we all know that they have that unconditional love, but they all represent that purity, regardless of whether they're our own or not.
Right.
And I think as someone who, like, I've fostered a bunch of dogs, Javier is my second dog myself. And the difference between him and any other dog is just that I picked him out. Like any other dog we could have that relationship. It's just by circumstance that I have it with Javier right now. And I think most dog lovers are like aware of that. Yeah. They know any dog at any moment they could totally fall in love with, even if they see them walking by on the side of the street.
Of course.
That the familiar tail wag, like the eye contact,
the smile. Like the smile. It's any, how many animals really like smile? Like, yeah. That's, I mean, and I don't know, maybe it's a lot, but I don't think of many other animals that like legit like smile, but yeah.
What is it? A quokka? This is maybe a random poll, but
is that
quokka,
that one, that little cute?
I want to say it's a marsupial, and it's this little guy, and they like all they do is smile. But
it
like,
was like notorious. It went. It was like a viral animal for a while, right?
Okay, yeah, right. It had its moment.
All right, so there's at least two.
Yeah, no, go on. I think that really boils it down. It's the relationship you have with your own dog. I think you can, not that they could easily be replaced, but you just know that you'd be able to foster that connection with any dog.
Do you find it unique that you were able to, because there's not many things in the world that are blanket applicable across, you know, even like cat lovers, right? and let's, you know, just for a minute, I don't know that cat lovers like love everybody else's cats. Is there like a we rate cat? I just don't think it's the same universal kind of thing. So you tapped into that. What point did you figure it out? Where did the light bulb go off where you're like, oh, shoot, this is something that's going to be massive?
Well, just massive. Before I answer that, the most frequently asked question is, where's We Rate Cats? And I think there's a few answers. And it's that I didn't grow up with cats.
Yeah.
I'm actually allergic. So I wouldn't do that justice, especially nowadays where the expectation of the account would be to speak to that relationship.
Yeah.
I just don't have that, those chops. So no We Rate Cats in the future from us. Yeah. If you'd like to do it, there's been many that have tried. None have really stuck. I think someone's doing top five cats of the week.
Okay.
But that's about the longest standing.
Enough cat talk on this show. No, go on.
No, I think that the moment that I realized that it was something was when we posted a GoFundMe for the first time of someone whose dog had been featured before. And we posted that first GoFundMe because the dog in it, we'd featured previously, their family had always dressed up. There were four dogs. They always dressed them up for the holidays. So we featured them several times. And one of them was a senior pug who needed a wheelchair, just an old age arthritis related wheelchair. And the family made a GoFundMe. It was about $700. And we featured that GoFundMe because we thought, and this is still when it was just me, I just say we because it's We Ray Talks, but I thought that my audience would be especially empathetic to the situation because they were familiar with the dog already.
Yeah.
And we raised that $700 for that wheelchair in like 45 minutes.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, this is something the audience has been waiting for. This is something that they will be sympathetic to in terms of the problem. And wow, we have a lot of power with this account.
Yeah.
So that was in late 2016. And then starting with the first Friday of 2017, we featured a GoFundMe every single week.
Wow.
So what I learned from We Rate Dogs in general was that consistency is what really helps you on the internet. So the ratings, the volume of the posts, that was all helping us. But if we were going to really get people to embrace the GoFundMes, we had to do it every week and had to theme it. So we'd GoFundMe Fridays. and through that, we raised close to $3 million over 3 years, just featuring those individual stories. It got to the point where we were getting sent 500, 600 a week.
Yeah.
And we had to vet them. It was brutal. But what we learned from that eventually became the 15 out of 10 Foundation.
So let's talk about that. Okay. I thought it was 15, 10. So 15 out of 10 Foundation, because the rating, the highest rating
named after the highest rated dogs
is a 15 out of 10, which I'm how many dogs have received a 15 out of 10?
About 60. It's now gotten a little bit convoluted because of the foundation.
Yeah,
like every dog we sponsor
has to be
is a 15 out of 10. Yeah. But before we started the foundation and like actual hero dogs that have received it, about 60.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with Emma Greed, available where you get your podcasts.
Okay, explain. Let's talk about the foundation because that's so important and it's so valuable.
Yeah, so we sponsor shelter dogs in shelters whose medical needs would prevent them from being adopted. So
shelters across the country.
Across the country. So we have 54 rescue partners.
Okay.
They go into their communities, basically the work that they are already doing.
Yeah.
They go into those communities, those shelters, and they, if they come across a medically flagged dog, like shelters, the placard in the that shelters have to kind of describe the dog at a glance, it'll say whether they're medically flagged or not. They'll go in there and they'll pull them, or they'll consider pulling them. They'll send us a plea and basically summarize the medical needs, wow, give us an estimated low and high cost of care. Yeah. And then we will decide yes or no on sponsoring. We're at 97%+ saying yes to those pleas. Wow. And then we have a variety of fundraising paths that those dogs can fall into. The foundation now is doing very well, so that when we commit to a dog, we're not relying on any outside funding. When we say yes, the dog is getting whatever they need.
Wow.
But to sustain the foundation, they fall into a few different buckets. We have a membership where people can give like a minimum $5 a month, okay, and help all the dogs. Our Tell Your Dog I Said Hi merch, a portion of proceeds go to the foundation. And then occasionally we maintain the public facing fundraisers because that's what people have embraced so far.
Yeah.
So when we started the foundation, the GoFundMe's just changed into 15 out of 10 dogs. And we, the speed at which we can still fund these dogs is ridiculous. We're talking like we'll have, it's actually a quite a balancing act in our back end, because we'll have a dog that needs funds go out via to our email list.
Yeah.
At the same time, a different dog goes out on social, and then they both reroute to our rollover page, which will have four or five dogs that are close to funding.
Yeah.
So that we can make use of all the traction. So that's been the one like difficult through line. With GoFundMe, it updates every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So when we used to post GoFundMes, we would overfund those dogs by thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Because no one would realize that they funded.
Of course.
Yeah. So partially, one of the reasons for the foundation was we could technically fix that and make sure that all of the funds were going to the most needy dog. So now, once the dog is funded, it reroutes to another dog so that we can just make use of the ridiculous traction.
How do you have the bandwidth to be involved in all this stuff? Because again, we haven't even touched on Thoughts of Dog, which by the way, again, I'm going to lose the track, but this is true. Thoughts of Dog is almost cool. I'm a reader, right? Like, so I love seeing the dog. I love seeing cute pictures of the dog. But Thoughts of Dog is just like, will not be able to do it justice, but it's short. Dog-like sentences that really sound like they came from the mind of a dog. I mean, again, I should have like had a couple examples, but I still wouldn't do it justice. Like, do you have one offhand? Like, here, let me see. I know.
The one that I'm the most proud of is if you search it, it's got the word noggin in it. And how does it start? I can easily pull it up.
But and by the way, just in case you're not following, the handle is dog_feelings, right?
Yes.
And it's called Thoughts of Dog. And it's so simple. And again, it's one of these things, if you check our We Love Dogs thread, you're going to see like a history of these like coming up. Where it goes.
So so this is the one that I think it might be the best thing I've ever written, to be honest. So this is, to give a little bit more context, this is an account where I write from the perspective of a dog. I'm only able to do this because of at the time when I started, I was like 2 or 3 years into We Rate Dogs, and I was just so ingrained in that community. Like, one thing that's helped everything is that I am a part of this community. I love dogs so much. I'm like a viewer when we post something. I'm in the community. So there was a gap where I would have a funny thought, only funny from the perspective of a dog, or only funny if a dog thought it. And I couldn't post that from my personal account. I couldn't post it from We Rate Dogs. It wouldn't make sense. So I started a new account, Thoughts of Dog. And obviously I had millions of We Rate Dogs followers to direct to it when I made it. But the one that I'm most proud of that also gives you context is, sometimes the human presses their noggin against mine to figure out what I'm thinking. So I just think really hard about how much I love them and hope they figure it out. Man. And I would like, that was like the pinnacle of creation for me. Like, I wasn't, because also We Rate Dogs, we're relying on others' media. We're relying on other people's stories. We're relying on the dogs to do great things. With this, it was like, I did that. I wrote that. It was kind of, there was like a selfishness to the creativity of it. I was very proud of it.
Yeah, and you get a creative outlet, and it's such a unique voice too.
So fun to write for that. Now, so that was birthed on Twitter. It was very specific to Twitter because it was, again, there was a character limit and it was
perfect
copy.
It was perfect. And that's what people were consuming and looking for. And like,
yeah,
you know, that landscape has changed a little bit. You know, that platform, I should say, has changed. But people like that. And truthfully, it's here's what's interesting to me is like, you're able to make people sort of choke up and cry on these little things. That's where, look, this guy, I know that it sounds like, I don't even want to say it sounds simple and minimize what you're doing, because what it is it really is like beautiful. It's, and it's not necessarily comedic. Like they are, it's always a combination of like, I'm laughing, but I'm like starting to like tear up and you feel, because you're like, this is expressing like how I feel my dog feels, and you see it in their face and you capture that. Talk about like the inspiration on being able to, you know, like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, like, you know, to immerse himself in a role. Like, how do you get inside a dog's head? Like, where does the writing, obviously you have comedic chops. So where does it come from? What's the inspiration? And
I think that I personally find that one of the highest forms of art is being able to make someone cry. Like that's an emotion. That's an emotion that is hard to, It's hard to convey. It's hard to, people have to be very invested in the thing that you're doing in order to evoke, that emotion. And so sometimes I would write with that as the goal. How can I tap into those emotions specifically? Thankfully, people care a lot about dogs, so it's not the biggest barrier to overcome. But really it was direct inspiration from the community of We Rate Dogs people that were so, I mean, so dog obsessed, like that they really embody a lot of, like they're able to easily pull out what we have in common with our dogs, why they make us laugh and cry, like why they're such exceptional creatures. And so a lot of inspiration from them. And also, I had, my family had a golden named Zoe. Yep. And, she passed at the end of last year, unfortunately, but she was the huge inspiration of that account. I would just be sitting with her and in one side, I was like, there'd be sessions where I'm like, okay, I would like to post something. What could I post about? And so I would sit with her and try to find inspiration that way. But other times she would just do something. Yeah. Like there's one that she would always love to stand. Like she'd be like, I want to go outside. And then we'd open the door. She was like, I don't want to go outside, actually. So we have a really funny one, again, really proud of it, is like the human thinks there are two options, inside or outside, but I'm going to butcher it. But if they would simply elevate their mindset, they would uncover a third option, which is stand in the doorway and sniff the air. Sometimes it's a combination of like inspiration from
sitting on the porch. My wife and I like sitting on the porch and just looking at stuff and feeling the night and the air. And
I think you mentioned the simplicity of it as well. And I won't argue that for a second. This is everything about it is so simple, but there's also, I think there's relief in that. There's, because I think we strive for their simplicity a lot of the time.
And purity.
Yeah.
And just overwhelming happiness, eternal happiness. And
They've got it right. Like they've figured it out. And I think we would love to revert to that most of the time.
Sometimes I think, and tell me if you agree with this, that a dog is a 6 to 9 year old child.
Oh, they're toddlers.
Minus the like, bratty talking, like the great things that we love about children. And like, you see children sometimes, you're like, that's so awesome. Or you're a kid and you're, but minus all the bad stuff, right? So sometimes I kind of think it's that where it's just the purity, the naivete, the optimism about the world, the curiosity about everything. And like, you know, like you said, like you want to not want to go back to being that, but like, it would be nice to live like that. I got to read one more that I just, and there's, 1,000 of these that are funny and awesome and touching. This one just came up. It's a little bit of a thread. And again, I'm not going to do it justice because if you're not familiar with dog_feelings, thoughts of dog, it's the grammar and the punctuation. And it makes it really feel like if a dog would be thinking this is how the thieves.
That is one thing, like to differentiate the account early on Twitter, I would overuse punctuation with, like, I put a period after every natural pause. So that's what you're referring to. And it did help it stand
and
out.
And it's tough to convey on a podcast, but I'm going to do it anyway. So here's the thoughts of dog, right? A ladybug has entered the household and I, am on the way to introduce myself. Next tweet, all caps. I sniffed too hard. The ladybug went up my nose. Next tweet. I sneezed so they could escape. And now the human is here, helping them back outside. That did not go at all how I planned. If the ladybug is reading this, I am so sorry. And it's like, again, where you're just like, that would be, especially I picture a golden, by the way, right?
Yeah,
and you're like, 'cause goldens are really smart, a lot of personality.
I think it helps that sometimes they're not very smart.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think labs and goldens have they have this aloofness to them that, and a goofiness that is really, can be mistaken for a lack of brain cells, but I think they're also very, trainable breeds. Yeah. So I think you have, but with those two breeds, goldens and labs, you have the full spectrum of dog.
Yeah.
You have brilliant, potentially service dogs, therapy dogs, the comfort dogs.
We had Guide Dogs of America in here, by the way.
Great organization.
Show. Yeah.
Great organization. Yeah. You have that spectrum. And then you have the opposite of that, where they have no idea what's going on around them. They can barely, discern their own bodies in space. It's, I think that for those two reasons, those are very special breeds.
We had a yellow lab growing up named Mandy, and and I was younger, but one main character trait I remember was that she would not stop eating Kleenex and toilet paper. And I was like, why do you love like soft paper so much? But that was just her bit. Anyway. So now going back, so We Rate Dogs is growing and the foundation prior to it being a foundation, you're raising a lot of money. Thoughts of Dog is just starting. You're getting big and you're having millions of followers. It's like 2017, 18, 19, right? Let's call it. What I want to know is when did you come to Los Angeles and why the move?
Yeah. So again, I was in school when I first made the account. I dropped out after 2 years. So that would be, I dropped out. Oh, summer 2018.
Was that a hard decision?
It was. It was because there was no. It was a very emotional decision because there was nothing about We Rate Dogs that instilled confidence that it would be around for another week.
Yeah.
Like it was very tumultuous, and so is the internet. Like things come and go very quickly.
Man, of course.
In retrospect, how was I supposed to know that I'd be one of the very few internet things that can last a decade?
Yeah.
Like that was never really on my mind. So it was really a decision based on my own mental health at the time. Like I was incredibly overwhelmed trying to balance, you know, a day job, school, and an account is growing like that. And thankfully I have very incredibly supportive parents who not only embraced this weird internet thing, but invited me back home for a summer while I figured out if it was something I wanted to pursue full time. And within a couple weeks of quitting a job and dropping out of school, I could fill my time with We Rate Dogs and with business related things for it.
That was my next question. You have to. I mean, as much as we love it and you love it and you clearly love dogs, like you gotta have some revenue and some income coming in. Yeah.
I had no idea how to make this a sustainable thing.
Right.
And I was so bad at fielding inquiries that the account would get because I would just do everything for free. Like I would be like, I wouldn't understand the value of the account. Yeah. I knew it was influential and I knew we could raise money at the time, but I didn't understand that people would pay for us to be their billboard. In 2017, late 2017, we did our very first partnership, and it was with Disney to promote to promote Lady and the Tramp, like some release, some Blu-ray release or something for Valentine's
Day. Did they reach out to you? What was it? Like on Twitter?
We had an email in the bio.
Okay.
Again, that I struggled to field, like I didn't know how to manage it, but, that was our first partnership and that like swung the door open. The partnership we officially raided Lady and the Tramp and then we featured other dogs in love for Valentine's Day. And that kicked open the door for other partners to be like, oh my God, you can do this. And we had got to say, my favorite thing in the world is saying no to these people. So I got to say no a lot to brands who wanted to do dumb shit and really take, like, the best partnerships still to date have been ones where they respect our creative and they they get it. They don't want to meddle. They want to be kind of, they want to hitch their wagon to what we're doing.
They follow you for a reason. They enjoy your content for a reason, because you're good at it, because you have a specific voice, because, and that's what's resonated with people.
Yeah.
So when brands approach you, you just said it, they need to hitch their wagon to you, not write content in their voice and their direction.
Yeah.
I think that's very important, both for you and for the brand.
Yep.
And consumers respond better
Absolutely.
When a brand is portrayed in the context of what you're already doing. So if anybody's listening, that's an important
episode just about that.
Yeah. Okay. Go on.
But so that was a really good first experience. And from there, we had partners that did respect all those things. And that's when the team started to grow. I actually met now a partner in the business, at a business summit in West Virginia, because I was still there.
Okay.
He actually, gave a talk at this summit 20 years earlier about like the internet. And I was there 20 years later talking about the social media. Like it was very cool. I met him. He
passing the torch, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He offered to help with to manage some of those inquiries. And that's what allowed it to be an actual sustainable thing that can grow, is that I had help to monetize it. From there, we kicked it into gear with the merchandise.
Yeah.
And now we have 25 employees.
That's fantastic. So it's a company. It's big.
Between the two organizations, it's a lot. I never thought it'd be so much people managing.
Is it tough for you to manage?
I've hopefully now have some of the skills, but I did not start with any managerial skills.
Yeah, you're a nice, genuine, good-hearted person, which is not the archetype for CEO manager. And it's tough because you have to make tough decisions.
Yeah. And all of my decisions were rooted in like protecting my baby at the time, which was We Rate Dogs. Like all of it was preserving what I thought was necessary, which is like the creative integrity and the audience sentiment towards what we were doing. Like a lot of my managerial skill set was rooted in fears, and that is not like a place to lead from.
Yeah.
So over time, the most important skill set I've learned is delegation. Like that by far has helped me the most. And now we're in a place where if it's something I really, really care about, and I really, really care about how it's perceived, how it is packaged, and how it is ultimately delivered to our audience, then I have the freedom to get involved. Otherwise, our editorial team has got it.
How much are you involved in the day-to-day?
Still heavily, but it's because we're still, like, our final frontier is YouTube, which we're doing it backwards.
Yeah.
We started on Twitter. Now, as the video platforms have grown in popularity, we're getting into those. But it is, I will say, having not done it, but I think it's a safe assumption, going from mega popular on YouTube and then going to the other platforms that are shorter form, much easier than going
from... Do you
from
think, though?
I do. Because I'm starting with copy and a photo. And now I'm going to, we're trying to make like long form YouTube videos and it feel maybe, and it's again, just not a skill set that I'm as, like I got to obsess over Twitter and how it works for years.
Yeah.
And so that came easy to me. And this is incredibly foreign, like entertain, like capturing people's, my favorite part about it is that it's more evergreen, and immediate success is not like a tweet. You know, if it flops within minutes,
correct.
A YouTube video, give it a week. Like that is, I think, a better approach to art in general. But no, this is our final frontier. I feel like we did it backwards, and I feel like the other way is a little bit easier.
Okay. Well, you're talking about the dogs were good again. Right?
As
far as the podcast. Now, you call it long form video. Do you consider it a podcast, or how do you construct that? Yeah.
It's a podcast. We call it a show. And our primary, interest in it is growing YouTube. Like the audio, the listeners, first of all, very difficult because we have an adoptable special guest on every episode and we're talking about dog stories still. Yeah. A lot of that is still rooted in visual. It's only certain episodes that we spend a long time scripting that feel like they could be an equal experience for a listener.
Right.
So that's why I think video, I put in the video category. So podcast, we call it a show, cover both bases.
And you cover some good, you cover some good ground on there. I've seen the best cartoon dogs, dogs I'm thankful for. You've had guests like Rocky Kanaka, wolf dogs. And speaking of which, first wolf in Los Angeles County in 100 years was spotted a couple weeks ago.
Do we know if that's good or bad?
That's what I thought too, because I believe it was a she looking for a mate and a proper and a suitable habitat, right? Which means that they couldn't find a mate and a suitable habitat from the hundreds of miles away. And she came from the Eastern Sierras, by the way, which I'm like, dude, you're making that drive. That's a trek. And again, but animals are beautiful and wonderful.
That's like going from here to Santa Monica.
Absolutely. Like on foot. Yeah. No, exactly. So first of all, but you have, and you also have not been shy about addressing tough topics, which I got to commend you for. And it goes to your good heart and the place where you're just coming from in general, where you've said, and I saw the episode recently on the murder of Renee Nicole Good, where you said, quote unquote, I'm at my best when I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to get into like the politics of it, but I think that that speaks to a lot of where you come from. And again, to bring it back to the dogs, where there's this genuine goodness of spirit, this great nature. And just, again, it's important not to get a platform, but like to have an honest dialogue and to say how you feel and to respect other opinions and standpoints. And hey, we may not agree and see eye to eye, but this is how I feel. Yeah. And I think just opening the door on that dialogue is important. So
I like to think that We Raise Dogs has really never been shy about some of these things. And the better lens I think is it's not political, it's humanitarian.
Yeah.
And I think that every time We Raise Dogs has tiptoed into waters outside of immediate dogs, it's been for humanitarian reasons and not tax code. Right. So, the first time We Raise Dogs got political was the Women's March in 2017. It was at the time the biggest march ever in DC, and there was a dog with a sign, a rainbow sign that said, "I march for my moms," and that even this was when I was 20 years old. Yeah. So even at that time, having not formed all of my opinions myself, I was like, that's beautiful. And also, I couldn't conceive of the reason why there'd be opposition to us sharing that photo. So we shared that photo, and then we were part of the resistance immediately. Yeah, it was crazy. And so we posted that. Then we do every June, we do Pride Dogs. That's a good follower cleanse.
You know, the episode that I've had the most unsubscribes from of in LA in a minute was the LGBTQ impact. Los Angeles' LGBTQ impact on the world, unfortunately. So,
like, which is drastic, massive.
Huge, significant. Yeah. So I see you on follower claims on that, but good for you. Keep
and
going.
I don't think of it like that's us protecting our community. Like that is us, that cleanse, those people leaving, whether we block them or they leave,
right.
Is protecting those that remain. It's now a safer place for people to engage, even though it's online, it's now a safer place for everybody to engage that they are gone. And so you'll never see me look at an unfollower count unless it's to point out to our entire wider audience or to our team that those people are small.
Loud voice. This is what I always say, because I delve into politics. I try to cover it apolitically. I try to come from an informational perspective. We've had Mayor Bass on. We had Rick Caruso on the next week. We've had Nithya Raman on. You know, we have these political figures. And we just had the LA City Attorney, Heidi Feldstein Soto. So we don't shy away from having these figures on. But I'm not even taking political stances. I'm getting information and letting you make your own opinion. But without fail, like, you know, there's a lot of loud voices, unfollow, get ready for the wave of, but when you look at the numbers, you're like, okay, so like people like being loud, but at the end of the day, most people are on board with the mission and what you're doing and appreciate what you're doing. And that's the important thing on that.
Absolutely. And when it comes to people like the swaths of unfollow with regards to like a Pride Month post, it's important, I think, to publicize how small those people are in retrospect, because I want to reaffirm for the community that the hate is small.
Yeah.
that so their opinions are small.
It could sound loud, yeah. But it's not a significant yeah. number.
I want people, when we make a post, I don't want people to be like, when a post has a pride flag, I don't want people to be in the comments or like scroll the comments with hesitancy.
Yeah.
Right. I want them to feel embraced and feel like they are welcomed there. So yeah, all of the quote unquote political stuff can easily be rebranded as humanitarian, and a growing wave within the animal welfare world yeah. is acknowledgement that animal welfare is human welfare. Like the two are intertwined. You cannot help only dogs
right.
because their problems bleed into everything that humans deal with. So just a brief example is a housing crisis that limits people from giving
a good home.
And it's that affordability is stacking dogs at the shelter. Like it's all intertwined, and acknowledgement of that, I think, is important because you have a lot of people that are obsessed with dogs that also put the blinders on when it comes to people in need. And so to blend those for people, I think, has been a growing trend, and it's been exciting to see.
It's a greater mission on your part, and I appreciate and respect what you're doing on that.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
But let's talk about LA. So get yes. me to how you came to Los Angeles, yeah. especially coming yes. from West Virginia. You know, I've never been to West Virginia. I've heard some things. I don't yeah. know if they're true, but give me, where'd you come? Why'd you come?
Yeah.
Where'd you first live? What was the dog situation when you came out here, et cetera?
So I moved in January of 2019.
Okay.
So I've described it to people as the best culture shock.
Okay.
Like it was culture shock, but it was all positive, and it filled me with optimism to be here. So I had a lovely upbringing in West Virginia.
Yeah.
I was spoiled by access to sports. I was spoiled by being able to be good at those sports because relatively, West Virginia doesn't have the strongest talent pool. And I won swimming events at our state meet. I would not have made finals in Ohio.
Right,
like
right.
It gave me the chance to be great at something.
Right.
And I really appreciated that. And in retrospect, I appreciate it more. Just the access that I had in
that.
The education that I got was surprisingly wonderful. I was in Charleston, West Virginia, and yeah, my elementary, middle school, high school were in the top five in the state like the whole time I was there, which was wonderful. So very thankful for that. When it comes to entrepreneurship and social media and opportunities specific to digital media,
yeah.
that really doesn't exist there.
Okay.
And the opportunities that I had early on while I was still there were more, do you want to make a show for cable? Not, do you want to collaborate with Hozier? So the other partner in the business, his name's John. He's the one, he's seen more dog photos than anyone else on the planet. He was the one going through those DMs. Now he's our head of merchandise and a partner in the business. He managed, a rapper named Jay Zac, okay. and his producer.
I've seen him, by the way. I still follow him. Yeah.
That's amazing. The yeah. four of us made yeah. the decision to come out here because in all of those industries, yeah. LA is a very exciting thing.
Right.
So we made the-
And you're all from West Virginia?
No, the three of them are from Connecticut, Massachusetts.
Okay.
The four of us moved out here January of 2019.
Yep. Follow Jay Zac. Yep.
he's
good. So he's
talented.
Legit. Dude,
so mad talented.
Flow. Okay.
So the four of us, this is actually very LA.
Shout out Jay Zac.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Very LA story is that I forgot to tell them that I flew into Burbank.
Okay.
So they went to LAX.
Yes.
And it was raining uh-huh. at like 6 p.m.
This is their first flight in.
They flew in like 2 days earlier.
Oh, sweet.
And I was a little bit late. I yeah. put my car on a train and I flew out here. And I forgot to say that I was at Burbank. So they were very kind enough to drive all the way back and pick me up at the way closer airport.
Yeah.
And then we had dinner at the Federal.
Yeah.
I've been in North Hollywood ever since.
Hey, what baby?
Yeah. And we were in a duplex. There was like one unit off the street. We had a little courtyard in the middle. It was incredibly affordable. I do not know how John found it.
Yeah.
But we were there for 2 years. I adopted Doug, big German Shepherd. Space got a lot smaller after that. And so I moved across the street, still in North Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And when I say like the best culture shock, I mean, there is so much opportunity and just things to do. Like, it's going to sound silly, but in West Virginia, it's like your favorite people don't come to town. The options for what to do in a night are pretty limited.
Right. Right.
And you can do anything you want here. And that was incredibly exciting for one summer because then, COVID hit. Still, I would say opportunities in LA during COVID far outpaced what was, you know, available, in West Virginia. And, now when I look at my favorite parts of LA, I could never leave the food scene.
Yeah.
The constant, like an almost like you're overwhelmed with diversity in like such a way that you can't ignore. And you become such a well-rounded person here. And I really appreciate that, having grown up and gone to college in North Carolina, and grown up in West Virginia. I just really appreciate that. It's made me a better person to be here.
That's a great sentiment and testimonial for Los Angeles. So just thank you for saying that. How did you feel Los Angeles was as a dog community? And again, you go in COVID, but give me your thoughts on LA as a dog city.
Yeah, it's up there. It's definitely up there. I think you cited that we got the most dogs.
5.3 million dogs.
And you know
dogs in the United States.
You would know it by the smell in North Hollywood at any given moment. You would know that.
Right.
I think it's up there. There's a healthy amount of dog friendly places. It's not over the top,
right?
But it's you can easily find a place to go.
I've actually heard some criticism because, again, our dogs are senior dogs. We don't just have Zoe. We have two other senior dogs, Bams and Nora. Bams is turning 17, God willing. Mm. Nora's turning 16. So they're not as easy to like travel with or even go eat with or even go to dog parks so much anymore. But I know that we were able to find enough spots, but dog friendly, I hear a little bit like it's not dog friendly enough compared to like San Diego.
And that's where like dog people all have a different line when it comes to like, they should be allowed everywhere.
Oh, boy.
I don't even feel that way. I think there's a responsible, like if you're in an indoor outdoor space, don't care what the business is. That's great. Indoor outdoor
grocery
space is
stores.
Great. That's a maybe for me. Like it's hard for me to. I think it depends on the temperament and breed of your dog as well. Yeah. I think there's everyone has a different line, and I think it's actually one of the few areas where I think it's probably tough for authority to come in and say here's a line.
Yeah.
But I think it's a healthily dog friendly city. Like you're not pressed to find somewhere. I'll put it that way.
That's true. Good. Walking, a lot of sidewalks, a lot of grass.
I will say that specifically in North Hollywood, Javier wishes there were a little bit more grass. Certainly. And I'm sure everyone says it, but the weather is unbeatable. Javi would agree.
But which is important that people, and again, going to your thing where like humans and dogs are so kind of intertwined, like, when you have sunshine 9, 10, 11 months a year, it's a lot easier because I know that we were having those big atmospheric rivers. Mm-hmm. My dogs, at least, are a little bit hesitant to go out and pee and poop in that. So, so the sunshine, they're much more responsive. And
There's the protest. Okay. He's actually just going to do a number on your area today.
That's all right, buddy. That's okay. Okay. All right. So that might be our sign to start wrapping up. So as we're wrapping up, I want to do a little bit of trivia with you, right?
Sure.
And no pressure, because this is my forte, not your forte. So we already talked about LA as the city with the most dogs, 5.3 million dogs. And now this is moderately, I'm going to say controversial, but it's interesting. What is the most popular dog in Los Angeles as far as the most popular licensed breed? And now, so that's a little bit crazy. So formally the most popular dog breed in Los Angeles.
Is it a Frenchie?
French Bulldog. Good job.
I have
the dog father.
I have controversial Frenchie takes.
Same here, man.
John's heard him a couple times.
Okay. What is number two? I see him a lot.
Husky?
In my golden retriever.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's good. That's good.
Number three is a dog that I may have a couple controversial takes, and I feel this is a very Los Angeles dog, but what do you think?
Is it a doodle? Is it a golden doodle?
No, no. Although that is, that's probably the most Los Angeles dog, yeah. though, but in a different way, not that type of Los Angeles dog.
Oh, goodness. Is it, and it's not husky.
Quite opposite from a husky.
Pug?
Chihuahua. Chihuahua, that's, number three. Most. Okay, how many official dog parks are there in Los Angeles?
Oh, goodness. Official dog park.
From this, in the city.
Yeah.
Which again, now this all becomes super nebulous now because Beverly Hills doesn't count. Santa Monica doesn't count.
So it's like, just
LA city. And this is one of the reasons, I'll just give you a little hint. This is one of the reasons why LA may not be labeled dog friendly. Yeah. Because the number is actually surprisingly.
I'm going to go 35.
12.
Whoa.
Only 12 officially sanctioned LA dog parks. The dog capital of the United States. That seems like a very low number.
Maybe 35 patches of grass.
Okay, there you go. How long is the average dog walk in Los Angeles? Either miles or minutes. I have both.
Ooh, I'm going to go minutes. I'm going to go 12 minutes.
That's about what my walks are. But no, supposedly 31 minutes, 1.2 miles.
Now, wow, that's impressive.
This
that's
is self-reported,
good.
Though. So
you guys are lying.
So people may be thinking and saying that they're walking that far. You know one thing I like about Los Angeles, and I don't know if this is as commonplace in other cities, but my wife has a feed and like, well, she has some highlights on her Instagram feed because she's an interior designer. So this is one of her favorite things to see. But you see dogs out car windows all the time. And dogs, what are your thoughts on dogs out car windows or the fact that LA is probably the capital, the unsubstantiated?
I think it's one of the most stereotypical dog behaviors. I think it's represented across cartoons and media very well.
Yeah.
So I'm all for it. Yeah. And if there's anybody hesitant regarding the safety of it, they make something called doggles. Doggles.
Really?
They're little goggles just in case, because LA roads, you don't know, doggles. If something pops up, you want to make sure they're all comfy and safe. So yeah, you can get them little goggles, safety goggles. And then yeah, all for it.
And if anybody sees any dogs out car windows, send me a picture. You know, I always respond to DMs, but we love those. And it is a fun little passion project for my wife and I. All right, Matt, one last thing, and I'm going to put you on the spot. We have Doodle Joey here. I'm going to have you give a rating. I need a we rate dogs for Zoe.
All right. And it's a good thing we have the CEO here so he can approve it.
Oh,
yeah.
Zoe, put a nice smile.
So one thing about Zoe, and I recognized this immediately, was that it looks like she's wearing pants. the color on her back legs make it look like she's wearing pants. And I really, really enjoy that. Also, it looks like she has one sock on her right front.
The silver paw.
You have one silver paw, one silver sock. So for that alone, only spending again about an hour with her, we're going to go 14 out of 10.
Yay! You got a 14 out of 10.
And please extend that to your other two dogs as well. It gets a little bit chaotic when multiple different ratings go to different dogs in the family.
Be a little bit of jealousy.
Yeah.
All right. So. Nora would specifically be jealous. But thank you. Well, Joey, you're a 14 out of 10. And now, last but not least, this is one of my favorite ones. All right. This goes back. I want to give a fact because you had brought up the nature, and I forgot how you said it, but how humans and dogs.
Ancestral.
There you go. So dogs, for all the transplants in Los Angeles, the city of transplants from the people to the palm trees, dogs are actually considered indigenous and native to Los Angeles. They're considered native, because they used to help the indigenous folks with their hunts and stuff like that. So dogs are actually in the fabric of Los Angeles from way back. So kudos to that. But here's my stat. In 1872, the population of Los Angeles was 5,700 people. How many dogs were in the city? This was the first official census count of dogs was in 1872. How many dogs for 5,700 people?
I'm going to go more than the people. I'm going to say 8,000.
Great guess. Great. I'm glad you guessed that. It was 4,000, which okay. is still pretty astounding. Almost a 1-to-1 yeah. human to dog ratio. And that was the year that the LA County Marshal required dog collars, by the way, and a tag identifying the owner. And from there, LA's love affair with our canine friends blossomed.
That's so incredible.
Yeah. So there you go. But no, what is incredible is you, man, like truthfully, in this world, bringing smiles, bringing joy, reminding us of just the purity and just what real love is. Tears to our faces, laughs. Like, honestly, man, like, we rate dogs, thoughts of dogs, we are good again. They are good again. Say it.
The dogs are good
again. The dogs are good again, man. It's all fantastic. And like, it really is meaningful and impactful for what you're doing. And I'm glad that you're here in LA for me to be proud of it. So thank you for doing what you're doing. And thank you for coming on again. Any last words on your end, man?
Oh, no. Thanks for having me. Thanks for welcoming Javi into your studio.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, Matt Nelson of We Rate Dogs. Javier, thank you for being here. Zoe, we love you. And, you know, everybody in Los Angeles, kiss your dog, pet your dog, adopt a dog. And follow We Rate Dogs, and the dogs were good again. This is Matt Nelson. Thank you so much. All right, LA, it's been a minute.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.